the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. What a program we have for you tonight. Of course, we do have producer Forrest Connor, we have investigator Shelley Wright, and the man of the hours, Dr. William R. Forstchen, New York Times best-selling author. He is a professor of history, world traveler, and the adventure stories just go on and on. You're the closest thing, Bill, to the real Indiana Jones we've ever had in the studio here. And, you know, earlier in this year, I went to Transylvania and investigated some creepy castles. Shelley Wright was on that same expedition. When did you go to Transylvania, Bill?
Transylvania.
Transylvania.
And see, my daughter went with me. She was in fifth grade then, so it was around 05,
yeah,
06. And I was going over with a friend of mine to hook up with his friend, who's an archaeologist, to work at Por Alisum, which was a Roman garrison town on the Dacian border. And we came into Cluj, and then we went up into Transylvania.
Yeah.
And it was weird and wonderful and great fun. The wooden churches.
Yeah.
Remember those wooden churches?
Those big fortified wooden churches.
Yeah. Yeah. Por Alisum was, we camped, literally, where a Roman army used to camp. Now, that was cool. I didn't have any weird, weird experiences. But, I mean, to be walking on a Roman road, the actual Roman roads, and climbing up on the fortress walls and shouting rude things at the Dacians at midnight,
yeah,
which I can't repeat on the air because somebody might know Latin.
Right.
But we were taught some wonderful anti-Dacian phrases. Had strange encounters with gypsies.
Yeah.
Ate where Vlad the Impaler was born. I had you going the other night. You were believing me. I said, oh, yes, they had wonderful blood soup. And they bought the meat out on little impaling sticks. No, it's just a tour. It's sadly where Vlad was born.
Right.
Now sells T-shirts.
Sure, yeah.
Which my daughter has one.
It's great. Yeah, Sigishwara.
Yeah, Sigishwara. Yeah.
The little village of Sigishwara. And you really do feel like you're stepping back in time there.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a little time capsule.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that you especially like to do. You like to go to places and mentally time travel and fit into the role that you may have had hundreds of years ago, especially when you go to places like Mongolia. Have you gone there recently, or are those trips
No,
behind you?
I mean, I've been raising my daughter on my own now for some years.
Yeah.
And I can no longer disappear into the Gobi or the northern steppes of Russia for 6 weeks the way I used to.
Yeah.
One of the cooler experiences in Mongolia that can relate to what we're talking about is, in Mongolia, people have just found or felt what they thought felt were sacred places. They're called uvus.
Right.
O-V-O-O. And they'll leave something there. I climbed up on one uvu. It must have risen about 30 feet above the steps to reach the top, and there'll be blue pieces of cloth that monks and such will tie there. And I'm standing on top of a 30-foot-high mound made up of little pebbles, rocks, vodka bottles, and how many thousands of years were underneath my feet?
Yeah.
You think of every pebble that was left there by a traveler. And we crossed up over these high mountains on horseback. Now, that was scary. I'll confess, that was one of the scarier experiences of my life. At 9,000 feet, I felt like in those old movies, you know, with explorers, and suddenly you hear, oh! and the leader of the expedition looks back, and some poor guy's fallen off the cliff, and it, and he says, well, at least he was not carrying the precious samples. Let's move on. And I'm looking down these sheer precipices that drop a couple hundred feet, and I'm realizing I'm on a horse, and my golden retriever has more brains than that horse.
Mm-hmm.
But we came across a shaman, and I swear, sitting in their tent, listening to that shaman chant and beat a drum, I wish I had an understanding of ancient languages to cross-compare it to Lakota.
Hmm.
Because it sounded like a Native American mm-hmm. ceremony, which we know is where Native Americans came from. They came from crossing over from where Mongolia is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I really did wonder, has anybody ever done a comparison of the chants of that shaman to some of the religious rites of the Lakota?
Sure.
And that was really, that was one of the most wonderful experiences, was just camping with those people, except for the fact that the ceremonial drink that they handed to me was curdled sour reindeer milk. Worst thing I've ever had in my life. If I talk about it anymore, I'll throw up on the microphone. But, yeah, you get off the tour bus.
Yeah.
Go where, there's been places where I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, how many Americans have ever actually visited this place or seen it, or for that matter, any people at all?
Right.
You know, get into the remote outback. It's all changing, unfortunately. I mean, with globalization and all that.
Sure. And one thing that's odd is that I'm sure when you go into that situation, you see how durable the culture is, and yet you turn around and you look at the world we live in now, in which we surround ourselves with all of these very delicate little electronics and conveniences. And it takes us, of course, to your phenomenal bestseller here, One Second After. And, of course, a lot of people listen to this show from podcast as well, but if you're listening to our Saturday, December 8th version of the show here. We're 13 days from December 21st, 2012. Now, I don't think that anything cataclysmic is going to happen on that date, but it's a great date at least for us to stop and take stock of the way we live and how prepared that we may be for some inevitable disaster. In your book, One Second After, of course, you talk about an EMP wiping out most of the electronics and sort of instantly reverting people to a pioneer-like culture. And it's even worse, of course, because in this particular case, now people have all these high-powered firearms, and it makes uncontrolled mob rule a much scarier thing. Do you have a sense that we are any better prepared to deal with that type of situation than we were when you published this book?
No.
Yeah.
The book came out 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Still a bestseller. A couple years back, NASA invited me to the Langley Center
mm-hmm.
to talk about the book. Now, I walk in, there's the audience, it's 200 of the most brilliant aerospace engineers, astrophysicists, all of that, and I got up on and up front, and now I got my PhD at Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue's most noted for its aerospace engineering program. In fact, Purdue has graduated more astronauts than even the military academies.
Wow.
The military tended to send its astronaut trainees to Purdue to get their master's degree in aerospace engineering.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the pecking order.
Yeah.
These guys out in the audience, they got PhDs in aerospace engineering or advanced, space satellite design. I'm a historian. So I said, listen, guys, if you think my thesis of this book, my theory behind the book of what would happen with an EMP, and we should talk about CMEs in a moment. Tell me right now, and we can all take a break. An hour later, I got done, and I said, you know, I'm more frightened and depressed walking out of here than when I walked in. There was not one dissenting voice in that entire audience. In fact, more than one was saying, it's going to be worse than what you're postulating, though. we lose our power grid from an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, which is easy to do. All you have to do is detonate a nuclear weapon 250 miles above the Earth's atmosphere, line of sight event. You could blanket almost the entire of the United States with one weapon over Kansas, though the perfect storm scenario was three weapons, East Coast, Central United States, then out towards the West Coast. You blow the whole power grid out, and according to the congressional studies of 2004, 2008, 90% of the American population will be dead within a year.
Wow. You know, since we haven't talked to each other in a couple of years here, we've both been busy and traveling. You may not know that I, over a year ago, I started up a company that produces solar generators for the home.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out of my own need for one. I wasn't satisfied with what I found on the marketplace. And mm-hmm. so I put a little team together and built one of these for my own house and then talked about it on the radio, and people started saying, hey, I want one, you know. So we've been selling these things, and they've done extremely well. And we now are offering some of these that have shielding as well, you know, for an EMP situation. But I got on Coast to Coast AM one night, and it was one of these deals when I got a call, you know, 3 in the morning, and they say, can you come on in 5 minutes
mm-hmm.
and talk about the concept of evil? Okay, well, that sounds like a very complicated thing to get into. So we're talking about evil and morality dilemmas, and this woman called in. Actually, I think it was a man. It was a man who called in. And he said, so if it all hits the fan, mm-hmm. so to speak, and we have one of these chaotic scenarios like you described in 1 second after, and a guy has a diabetic child, and he has to break into some facility to steal insulin to keep the kid alive. Is that evil? And I was really kind of put on the spot, and I thought about the fact that I don't think that two wrongs make a right. I think that it is wrong to do that. Because if everybody just does whatever they have to, well, that's the very definition of mob rule, and that's when everybody loses. And so I got a lot of criticism for this, and a lot of people said, oh, you're so insensitive. But as it turns out, my thinking was, if you're prepared for this, then, you know, that's the best way to avoid the situation. My friend Mobius said, hey, in 1 second after, Bill already went through this type of scenario, and how the refrigeration of the insulin would not even be there to necessarily keep it good long enough to help that guy's own child or a lot of other people who might need that insulin. We're going to take a break. When we come back,
let's pick up on that.
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on this kind of moral dilemma that we get into when dealing with how we conduct ourselves and how we prepare to prevent those types of scenarios from being an issue. Talking with Dr. Bill Forstchen. His website is Forstchen.com. That's Forstchen. We'll have a link at speakingofstrange.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and we'll be back right after this.
And pull up the tracks again.
people don't realize this song is really sort of based upon Stoneman's raid through Western North Carolina. And the singer of this song was, not surprisingly, from Arkansas. But what is kind of shocking is that the primary writer of this song was a Canadian. Or actually is a Canadian. He's still alive. But even as a historian, Dr. Bill Fortune, pretty good song, huh?
Yes, very. I was going to seize the mic if you didn't. We have to remember that half of America did lose a war.
Right.
They lost the war in their own territory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were talking about societal impact before.
Sure.
Okay. 250,000 Southern boys were laid in their grave.
Yeah.
That's out of a population of approximately 6 million. If it happened to us today, that would be the equivalent of us losing over 12 million young men. That's a higher casualty rate than the Russian army suffered in World War II.
Wow.
Another 10 to 15 million crippled. Trillions of dollars worth of damage.
Yeah.
And we wonder why Civil War sites are so haunted.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, you go to almost any Civil... If you go to a Civil War site, and you just sit out there at night, you can still feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Many people I know can hear it. Auditory hallucination or reality. Some sort of time portal, whatever. I mean, I'm a Christian. I was raised Catholic, and yet I know. I've seen it.
Yeah.
And I've felt it on many a battlefield, this overpowering sense of tragic loss. And you're the expert. I mean, explain to us what's the leading reasons for ghostly manifestations?
Well, I think when it comes to these entities, mm-hmm. the ones that seem to be conscious and interactive and mm-hmm. unpredictable and aware, it's either this absolute chaotic confusion where I think even they themselves may not realize that they've crossed some boundary between mm-hmm. life and death. Or, if the scenario is in fact correct that you may die and there's the tunnel of light and you know that you have the choice of moving on to some other realm, whether or not there actually is some God sitting there that's going to judge you, if you believe that, that alone may be intimidating enough to scare you away from that next phase. And it all boils down to looking at the ghost as ourselves, you know, how would we think and behave in that situation. And when you look at the Civil War, one, I think, valuable lesson we can learn is that it's not this clean scenario with here are the guys in blue fighting the guys in gray. There were all of these very complicated situations, skirmishes and people doubting each other and people becoming paranoid, situations like the Shelton Laurel Massacre that mm-hmm. erupted in which Southerners were killing Southerners. That's the kind of reality that you face when there's a breakdown of the society framework that we're used to. So that's kind of now what we're talking about with the way our technology could be wiped out, and we would revert back to these animalistic instincts. So before the break, we were talking about these ideas of morality and insulin. So how, I mean, give us your thoughts on what determines morality when these things happen.
I want to share one very quick story back on the war, and then I'll go straight to that.
Sure.
There was a wonderful historian in the county down from us, McDowell County, Miss Nina, passed away several years ago. She'd be over 100 now.
Wow.
And when I first met her, she used to take care of the Carson House down there.
Yeah.
And I joked with her a bit. I said, well, I'm a Yankee, but... And she whispered, I like Yankees. And I was like, why? And she said when she was a little girl, her grandmother... was still alive.
Uh-huh.
Her grandmother was 16 when Stoneman's raid came through.
Wow.
Her grandmother was dying of typhoid. And the division commander under Stoneman came up to their house and was being very, you know, everybody out of the house, we're taking this over. And so Miss Nina's grandmother's mother said, my daughter is upstairs and she's dying. Please leave us in peace. And the Yankee commander said, yeah, right. Went upstairs, took one look, burst into tears, came out crying, called for his doctor, and then told the family, he said, I have a girl that age at home, which is going to lead us back into what we were going to talk about. And when they pulled out the next day, they left 6 months' worth of rations and medicine. And after the war, he actually wrote to them and said, I pray that, you know, your daughter recovered. Hmm. He had been touched in his soul at the sight of a young girl who was struggling for his life. It took him to his own daughter.
Yeah.
To go into modern, what we were talking about during the break, we mentioned this. What's the definition of evil and morality? Well, have you ever seen the Monty Python skit of philosophers playing soccer?
No.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, they have Greek philosophers and German philosophers, and they come out, and Socrates is debating whether the ball exists, and Plato, is this ball really the ball, or is it the shadow? And wait a minute, Nietzsche has reached a conclusion? And then they... Philosophy is great until your daughter is dying.
Yeah.
And then all bets are off.
Sure.
You know, we can talk about, yeah, I hold a certain definition, very clear-cut definitions of good and evil. But when we suddenly go to the primal level of it's your child,
yeah,
that's in jeopardy. Or, as I wrote in the novel, it's your father who's in a nursing home and is dying. If you don't snatch some cans of Ensure to pour into his feeding tube and snatch some morphine to ease his pain, well, what's moral and what's not moral?
Sure.
The thin edge between our civilized behavior and orderly existence is based upon plenty.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of medication. There's plenty of food. There's plenty of fresh water. We don't realize just how pampered we are as a modern society.
Right.
Create scarcity, and you watch the social order break down within a matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised, and I think there's a lot of stories because of Sandy, what happened in Jersey, where I grew up, and New York, that people just are never going to talk about.
Yeah,
I think it was a lot grimmer than it definitely was a lot grimmer than the media ever will report.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are listeners who survived that, I bet some of them are nodding their heads. You know, yeah,
sure.
It was very ugly out there, and nobody wants to talk about it.
The very first thing that becomes a problem is clean, fresh water.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Let's go to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Well, air is the primary. You can live about 3 minutes max without it. Water, maybe 3 days, maybe four, depending upon the climate. It has to be clean, fresh water. If you get polluted water within 5 days, well, you're polluting all the other water sources because your body is voiding everything out. Food, at any given location, there's about a 3 week, on average, supply of food. That means in the stores, in your fridge, and then trucks. Unless you're in Sioux City, Iowa, where it's cattle as far as you can see, and pigs.
Yeah.
Medications. There are some situations where if a person doesn't take that pill every 12 hours, they'll be dead in 3 days.
Yeah.
Even things like antipsychotic medication. About 1% of the population 100 years ago had to be restrained in some way because of psychosis. Well, the vast majority of them just take a couple pills and they talk to themselves.
Yeah.
They're rather harmless. Take their medications away for 30 days, and you've got 3 million psychotics wandering around.
Okay, that's a great place to pause.
That's a great place to pause,
yeah,
isn't it? Speaking of psychotic.
When we come back, we'll continue talking about what this breakdown could actually look like, and more importantly, what can you do to prepare for it. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's Speaking of Strange.
the dream alive. From the morning past the evening to the end of the life. Grim fool, Asher on the 45. Well, it's grim fool, Asher on the 45.
Here is something that all of you should know about water. To live comfortably, a person requires 1 gallon per day. A gallon jug purchased at the store usually remains safe for a full year if the original seal is not broken, especially if stored in a cool, dark place. Now, to purify water that is questionable, boil it for at least 5 to 10 minutes or add 8 to 12 drops of bleach per gallon before drinking. And if you use bleach, let it sit for several minutes and shake it up before consuming. If possible, you should also filter questionable water using a coffee filter or cloth. So right now, a gallon of water and some generic bleach is cheap at your local grocery store. So buy some bleach today and add a gallon of water to your grocery order whenever you can to start your stockpile. And if you store tap water, only store tap water in containers that were meant to store consumable liquids. We're going to give you some little tips like this. I'm Joshua P. Warren talking with Dr. Bill Forstian. You've thought about all these scenarios, haven't you, Bill?
Yeah. Don't empty out the milk jug and just pour water in.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty bad. Let's go serious. Go to any camping supply store, any outdoor supply store. You can get a portable backpack capable water filter system down to, I think, 1 micron. Now, it's not good against petrochemical pollution, but it is for almost, and get it for $20-25. Get an insurance. The analogy I give is all of us who own homes, would you own the home without insurance?
Nope.
Even if, you know, the bank didn't require it, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Not to spend the $400 or $500 a year on insurance for your home.
Sure.
Well, what about insurance on your life? What about insurance on your spouse? What about insurance on your children and your parents for to stay alive? Even just for a month, I felt great empathy, pain. I mean, when I was watching the news reports of the people in Staten Island and Jersey who were out there 4 or 5 days later, and they're like, I have nothing. But there was a little voice in the back of my head, which was like, guys, 3-4 days before that storm hit, they were saying it was bullseye to you. You could have, as a quick emergency measure, fill up the bathtub.
Right.
New York City actually has pretty good water.
Uh-huh.
You can drink the water out of the back of the toilet tank.
Mm-hmm.
Don't drink it out of the toilet. Unless you just send your dog to that.
Yeah.
It always grosses me out. It's like, dog, don't come lick me now. Go to the market, and you don't have to. For example, there's one product. I'll do a product at Mountain House. You can get that online. And it comes in a large can, and it's like 6 or 8 meals. It costs about the same as going to McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
You remember seeing on the news with Sandy? The line down the street for people trying.
Yeah.
The account of one guy who went in, laid down $500 and said he wanted to buy all the hamburgers in the joint. Now, you could have gone and just get bouillon cubes. Every time you go to the market, if you threw 2 or 3 extra cans or dry packs of soup and such, and you just store that away in the closet.
Sure.
Within a month or two, you have a month emergency reserve.
Yeah.
Go to a big box store, buy a 50-pound bag of rice, stick it inside just a plastic trash container.
Mm-hmm.
You mix that in, you got 2 months worth of food.
Yep.
It is very, very simple to be prepared.
You know, you can go to so many of these discount grocers and buy a canned good for a dollar.
Right.
And, you know, you should pay attention to the expiration date, but as long as it's not damaged, these things can last for decades, can't they? If you're in a real crunch.
If you saw Mad Max, remember, he's eating the dog food can.
and if it starts to swell up, throw it out.
Then you got to throw it out, or if it's dented. Yeah,
there's a bacteria.
But we don't even need to do that. I mean, heck, Our diets have changed so much in the last 30 years. Most people don't eat canned meat anymore, or Spam or anything like that. Well, I grew up on that sort of stuff. I mean, we were a working class family in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But if every time you went to the market, you just set aside $5 extra.
Yeah.
You're buying an insurance policy on the survivability. Another thing I always point out to people is don't let that medication bottle get down to 2 days worth of medication
mm-hmm.
and then call the pharmacy.
Sure.
The old days of a pharmacy where you went in and they had a huge room in the back is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You go into a pharmacy now, let's say it's a crucial medication. The moment they punch that into their computer, it automatically goes to their central office, automatically reordered. You walk out with your prescription. Next day, the FedEx truck pulls up with a replacement. Well, FedEx ain't running anymore.
Yeah.
There's going to be a run on the pharmacy in the first hour.
Sure. So now...
And one final thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What happens when the ATMs don't work?
Yeah.
And your credit card's no longer ready. When was the last time you actually pulled up to a gas pump? Ding, 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 ding. And there was even a ding, 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 and a guy came out. And you actually pulled out money and handed him something called money?
Yeah.
Now it's just you put your... Well, all, none of that works.
Yeah.
I recommend to folks buy some silver coins.
Yep.
Dimes, quarters, half dollars. Silver right now, as we talk today, is at about $32 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
If you just even got a couple hundred dollars worth of dimes and quarters, that's real money. Because a day after something like this happens, you come up, you wave a $100 bill in front of me, I'll laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't going to trade.
Well, you know, for 40 years, Shelley's family has operated Wright's Coin Shop.
Really? You are?
Yes.
And
go to Wright's Coin Shop.
Yeah. And Forrest and I and all my friends, we go to Shelley, and we have our little stockpiles.
I noticed you were nodding when I said silver's at 32-something today.
Yeah, she's our resident gold silver expert.
We're
going
to talk after the show.
Okay.
And, but you know, the thing is, you can have the water, the food, the medicine, whatever goodies, you know, chocolate, cigarettes, beer, whatever is going to keep you in a positive mindset. But none of this matters unless you can defend what you have. Isn't that right? Because people will come and take it from you.
I feel a moral obligation to not go too far into that.
Sure.
Other than to preface by the following. My father was in the United States Horse Cavalry before World War II. He was a DI. He was a firearms instructor.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me firearms safety by military standards. I used to run a Boy Scout camp where I had to oversee, amongst other things, you know, the pistol range, the rifle range and such. All I'm going to say is this. If you feel the need to purchase a weapon, get the professional training.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for you, but for your entire family.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking to somebody yesterday who was sharing with me the story of a friend of their family's daughter was blown away because of some blankety-blank 13-year-old. Oh, wow, man, you got a shotgun in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
Hey! And he pulled the trigger and killed this girl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was not only liable in my mind, but his entire family was.
Right.
So if you're going to get a firearm, get the professional training.
Mm-hmm.
Because the statistics are correct. You bring a weapon into your house, the probability goes up something like 1,000% that there will be a violent incident involving a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, if you have a firearm, get the psychological training as well, because too many people have the firearm taken away from them
mm-hmm.
and used on them. But make sure your entire family's trained.
Yeah.
You can train a 4 or 5 year old in terms of what's good, what's bad,
uh-huh.
what to touch, what not to touch. My daughter was 5 years old. I was saying if anybody ever pulls out a gun, toy gun, anything, you run out of their house.
Yeah.
You run
yeah.
out of their house. That's all I'm going to say.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. We all know that whole issue of defense is very real.
At least,
and all I'm
going to
say is, be prepared.
Yeah. At least get a slingshot so you can have rocks in your driveway or something to project at people. The spears.
Actually, my neighbor helped, well, actually he built it, and I want to endorse him. He built a 19th century era Civil War fence around my property. And I have Civil War era flags up now, well, reproductions, and the next thing I want to get is a 6-pounder artillery piece.
Oh, that'll do it.
As a salute gun, yeah. Double canister at 100 yards. Battery number one.
We've got a couple minutes before our next break. What is a CME?
That's the really scary one. That's coronal mass ejection.
Oh, okay. So we're
talking solar storms.
All right.
People ask me, what's the probability of us being hit by North Korea? There's projections that sometime next week the North Koreans will launch another weapon that could missile that could reach as far as Los Angeles. That's an EMP-capable weapon.
Mm-hmm.
What's the probability we're going to be EMP'd? I think it will definitely happen. If not here, over Iran, Israel, somewhere, all right? CME, coronal mass ejection, I think almost a 100% probability in the lifetime of all of us sitting here and the audience listening, there will be a major CME event. And I know we're coming up on a break in a moment. If, with your permission, as the master of this program, if we could talk about the Carrington event.
Oh, yeah.
Of 1859 and what it did. CME can take down the power grid of almost the entire planet.
Well, that's a perfect place to pause because you were the first person who told me about the Carrington event and Starfish Prime and some of these other issues that demonstrate just what these EMPs would do. I'm talking with Dr. Bill Forstgen, and his website is forstgen.com, where you can learn more about the book 1 Second After, or just visit any bookstore and you will find a huge selection of his prolific work. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour number two with this discussion, and then, of course, hour number three, we call the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Coming up next hour, it's the Dark 30 Hour. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, when we bring you some of the more outrageous and controversial news as of late. Stuff you don't usually hear so much about in the mainstream media. We've been talking this past hour with Dr. William Forstgen about things that you can do to prepare. And don't forget, if you are interested in one of the Sunshine Simple solar generators for the home or the new Sunshine Simple Junior, the much smaller, even more portable version, go to sunshinesimple.com. And yes, they can be created shielded for you as well. sunshinesimple.com, and you can watch a little video there that shows you how these things work and why that, well, even when the fuel supply dries up, the sun will hopefully still be there, and you can tap into it with one of our units. And, in fact, the sun might be there even more powerfully than we want it to be sometimes. Let's talk a little bit about the Carrington event here in the last minutes of this hour and what that means for our technology, Bill.
I must start with, I almost had to wipe a tear out of my eye with what you were just playing. That was the bedtime song for my daughter. I mean, I didn't sing Ba Ba Black Sheep or anything like that. We'd both put on Civil War caps when she was two and a half, and we would sing Rally Round the Flag. That was her bedtime song. Yes, well, Rally Round the Flag, boys. Well, and she'd take her little cap off and raise it up, the Union forever. And then to keep things balanced, I also
good
taught,
job, Mr. Farr.
Yeah, I also taught her Marching Through Georgia, which my Southern friends would just sort of stare at me.
Yeah.
But anyhow, let's go to CME. Coronal mass ejection. All right. Analogy time. Picture the sun as a grapefruit. All right. Now, the distance, you know, the sun to the Earth, picture is about maybe about, I know I'm wrong on my math here. Let's say the Earth is about the size of a BB. All right. And it's orbiting about 100 yards out, going around the sun. Almost every day, the sun is throwing out what's called a CME, coronal mass ejections. Picture that as a 22 bullet departing from the sun. What's the probability that in any particular shot that's happening once a day, one of those coronal mass ejections from the grapefruit is going to hit the BB 100 yards away? Infinitesimal.
Mm-hmm.
But do it for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the math comes up. Your time to get hit.
Yeah.
Now, CME travels slower than the speed of light. It has a massive amount of energy to it. It triggers, smaller ones trigger those wonderful things, northern lights, which you, everybody should see at least once in their life. But if it hits our upper atmosphere with significant intensity, it creates an electrostatic discharge that comes down and hits the Earth's surface and creates the same effect as a CME. I mean, excuse me, an EMP. The big one, the last really big one was 1859. It's known as the Carrington event. Look it up online, Carrington, C-A-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. It blew out the Victorian Internet, meaning it blew out the telegraphy systems in the Northeast United States, in England, and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
What was the Victorian Internet? Think about how overbuilt those old telegraphy systems are. Copper wires were melting off the poles. The energy was striking railroad iron and setting the wooden ties on fire. Think of what that would do to our electronic infrastructure today. Picture those hundreds of thousands of miles of high transmission lines crisscrossing our country. They would melt. I've actually seen the videos and the test of testing a Carrington event load hitting these high tension lines, and an audience of 800 people are just sitting there going, oh my God, because those huge ceramic holders that they had, you know what I'm talking about, Josh, the big aluminum towers that crisscross our landscape. The overload was so intense that the ceramic holders were so overheating, they were exploding. And the wire was catching on fire and melting. Now, once you lose your high transmission lines, even if the generators still survive and you're standing there holding the plug to your refrigerator or maybe your grandparents' respirator, where's electricity going to come from?
Sure.
Now, this would not just be a event line of sight from a military weapon. If it goes on for 24 to 36 hours, the entire power grid of the world from about 20 to 25 degrees north to 20 to 25 degrees south of the equator is gone. Well, where do all the replacement parts come from now?
Anybody
listening to this want to shout real loud? Where do all the replacement parts?
Yeah.
China.
Yeah.
China. Sweden. Now, Sweden might be our friends a bit. You think the Chinese suddenly have a corner on the market for all the replacement generators? We'll get them to you tomorrow. You're our friends. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And they come
We don't have the backup. Our electrical infrastructure runs like almost everything else. Oh, if a part breaks, we can order it from Shanghai and it'll be here in a day or two.
Uh-huh.
And we might have one replacement part for the entire power grid covering an area of numerous counties. Do you remember, Josh, the big floods in 04? Yeah, it was 04 with the hurricane?
Uh-huh.
What happened to Asheville's water supply? Remember the big pipe coming out of the reservoir ruptured?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember where we got the pipe replacement pipe from?
Mm-mm.
It had to be flown in. I think it was like from Ohio or something. The water department didn't have a replacement pipe sitting there. Well, the same thing is true with our power grid system. We don't have replacement parts on hand to get us running again. We're screwed.
All right, guys. Hopefully you've taken some notes.
Let's go to the really weird stuff. I want to hear what your really weird stuff is to cheer me up.
Oh, it gets good. It gets good. Yeah, the Dark 30 Hour when we come back, and it's going to be even more fun to have Dr. Bill in the studio with us for the next 60 minutes. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange.